When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You are listening to the Thanks for Trying podcast, episode 1, hosted by The Last Skeptic, with very, very special guests Ed Skrein and Ben Bailey-Smith, a.k.a. Doc Brown. The following recording is unscripted, unadulterated, and recorded live and very drunkenly in a front room in East London in front of a bunch of mates, and thus contains very, very sweary language. Also, as a warning, if you haven't seen the movie Deadpool, there are a fuckload of spoilers in this episode, so sorry about that. Thank you to producer Seb White and Patron for the alcohol, and of course you for listening to us talking a whole gang of shit. Enjoy. Ladies and gentlemen, with great pride, I'd like to introduce today the first ever Thanks for Trying podcast, episode 1, hosted by myself, The Last Skeptic, and I'm very, very, very happy to have two very great friends of mine as the first inaugural guests of the show. Welcome, Ed Skrein and Doc Brown.
What's going on?
How's it going?
Good to be here, like, man. Like issue 1 of like a series of legendary comics.
And you know, we like the black and white ones, yeah, aren't we? We like
they're always the shittest ones. Episode 1 and they're always the worst. You know, you go back to like the first season of The Simpsons, you're like, that makes me feel sick.
Yeah.
So sorry about that, guys.
I actually read some of the really early Deadpools, you know?
Yeah.
Just recently, after seeing the film, I went back and like dug out a few of the really early ones, and it doesn't get funny until the writers realized that they were about to like.
Well, it's different writers actually, because there's a writer called Daniel Way.
Yeah, he's
took over.
Yeah,
Daniel Way was the one who made him schizophrenic.
Mm.
He was the one who I believe, and I might be wrong, made him break the fourth wall. I probably am wrong. I usually am, but he did a lot of the things
that we now
you know, think of as quintessential Deadpool.
Mm.
So Daniel Way is the man.
Yeah, it's bonkers because he started as such a sort of just like a cameo villain kind of thing.
But he was based on another character.
Slade Wilson.
Yeah.
And he's DC as well. So it's
like a nod to it. I think at the same time they were a little bit like, this guy's better. Mm. So do what you want to do.
And it was also reactionary to Spider-Man as well, in the sense that, you know, you had Spider-Man that was so funny, had so much humor.
Very straight-laced as well.
He was straight-laced, but he was funny.
He was funny, but it was more played for a younger audience.
Right. Yeah, it was for a younger audience.
Still is.
So then he becomes like the subversive, the fucked up Spider-Man, which is awesome.
And you know what? After like we had, after you Skyped me from LA a couple of weeks ago, and you were like, Corin, I've just met Mike Tyson. that was your exact call. I was on the 106 bus to Finsbury Park. You know, really glamorous. Best.
Who did
bus
you meet
the
on
world.
There?
Oh, well, there was a really smelly guy behind me. He was cool. And then you're like, I was just met Mike Tyson, cool. And then you're like, have you seen it yet? And I hadn't seen.
Have you
Deadpool.
Still seen it?
No, I watched it in preparation. I went to go see it the other day.
That happened because I bumped into him the other day and he told me that he still hadn't
seen
it.
I was nervous about it.
You know what's crazy and a super top secret that that almost nobody in the world knows is that our friend Corin, the Last Skeptic, came to the edit suite. I brought him to the edit suite in
of
LA
Deadpool.
Of Deadpool. And before it had even been finished, he saw the first fight on fire and the final scene at the end where he peels off the mask with the Hugh Jackman face and all of that. He saw both of that stuff.
And you know what? As a loudmouth cunt that I am, all right? Yeah, I fucking held that down for an idiot, you know, for a good 9 months.
I know.
You know what I mean?
So now you know he's director. Both a really good friend and a really shit friend.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he'll keep your secrets, Tim, but he won't tell you.
Yeah. He was like, do you know this guy? You're like, is he all right? He's not gonna. He's like, no, he's cool. It's my brother, man. It's cool. It's nothing. But the best bit about me sitting in that editing suite, which was, it was fantastic, just to like, as an excitable teenage, like, you know, like, fan of comic books and Marvel films and everything. The really exciting part of that was, it was when me and you were sat on the couch. We just watched all your scenes. I was like, oh, fuck, shit. You know, these scenes look incredible. You know, the fight scenes. And it was before the CGI had been put in.
Yeah.
And it was quite empowering because you came from this huge office of Tim's production.
VFX
suites company, and everything. Yeah. It was in this tiny little room. And so Tim, the director, turned around and he's like, hey guys, can I just take a picture of you guys? And so we turn around, we're just having a chat and we're just like, we pose, thumbs up, carry on talking. He's taking it on his iPad. And then his iPad bleeps and he goes, oh yeah, Ryan says, what's up? He says, hey boys. And it's like, did he just take a picture of us two and send it to Ryan Reynolds?
He did, yeah.
And then Ryan Reynolds replied.
And he was taking a piss out of my shorts, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right, yeah, he's so sharp. He was taking a piss out of my shorts, our little tighties.
I've got to say, Ryan Reynolds really surprised me in that movie, because I'm going to be the first to admit that I was never like a massive Ryan Reynolds fan.
Oh,
I just thought he wasn't. No, I always thought he was like just another white guy called Ryan. Do you know what I mean? But not.
There's so many of them.
Not as like, you know, big as Gosling or whatever, you know. And I was really, I mean, I warmed to him immediately. Maybe that was partly because of the laughter. Yeah. I mean, the opening credits, for anyone who's seen it, I don't want to ruin it for anyone who hasn't, but the opening credits are, I think, possibly the funniest opening to any movie I've seen. And you wouldn't. A lot of people wouldn't even class Deadpool as a comedy. Do you know what I mean? Which puts a lot of comedy movies to shame. Because those opening credits are, I mean, it just destroys the whole superhero genre in like a minute and a half. But it also shows you like...
The tone.
Yeah, the tone. The tone, yeah. Like we're never gonna say, oh my God, this is the most important movie ever made. Which is something I have to say you do sometimes get from a superhero movie. You're a little bit like, dude, chill. This is based on comics. Do you know what I mean?
This is like £15 and 2 hours out of my day. I'm just having some popcorn. Just
stop trying to save the world, dude. And it constantly did that in the movie. It constantly undercut itself as well as everybody else.
Yeah.
You know? And that is an achievement and a half. But yeah, getting back to the point, the fact that I was laughing so hard already, like I was with Ryan from the start. And then when he started rapping along to the, was it Salt and Pepper?
To Shoop, yeah.
Yeah, that was Salt and Pepper, I was like, I'm in.
So you're telling me that you didn't enjoy Ryan Reynolds in any of his rom-coms? Because I just like, I'm a big rom-com guy, all right?
Not, that's the problem.
I mean, you know, there's a really interesting...
how can you say that as a justification?
The Proposal.
The Proposal, come on.
Like, you can keep saying The Proposal if you want.
And I will. The Proposal.
And I've never seen it.
Oh, bruv, come on. You're a shit friend to Big Rye, right?
You've lost nothing.
No, but actually the best story of when we were shooting, which is much like what a hero Ben Doc is to me and my son because of I Am Bear, as opposed to all of the like seminal UK hip hop stand-up stuff, stuff with Ricky Gervais. We don't care. We love what I Am Bear, you know. when I was with my son, during the shoot, we were doing a lot of drawing. And so we were drawing, like, you know, Deadpool and all of these things. And, you know, he loves Turbo, so we were drawing Turbo. And I was there in the green room on the motorway where the car flips over and he sticks the knife. And we're there just hanging out. And I was saying... like, yeah, to Ryan's double, I was saying, yeah man, me and my son, we were drawing all these pictures yesterday, and we drew this big Turbo one, and Alex, Ryan's double, was like, you know Ryan was Turbo, right? And I was like,
oh no.
You are Turbo. Like, you are the Formula One speed snail. And for me, it's like, I've never seen The Proposal. I've never, you know, I hadn't seen much of Ryan before this except for Turbo. And
that's quite mad, isn't it?
The seminal role.
Like your opener when you met him.
Yeah, no, I was literally like, I was like, bro, he must have been like,
Turbo.
Again, he must have been like, great friend, shit friend. Because like, you know, I was so happy about that, but not about the other stuff. But you know, people... I heard a lot of people sort of sneer, you know, in my life and in our circles, mm-hmm. with this UK hip hop or acting or whatever it is, you're around a lot of sneering and a lot of
it's just easy to be negative,
like,
isn't it?
A lot of snipes, yeah. And you know, I try and stay gracious and move away from it, but it doesn't mean I don't hear it. And I heard a lot about Ryan before, and I just, you know, like always, I think to myself, well, boy, what would they be saying about me? And you know what I mean? Keep calm and carry on. And so I waited, and when I met Ryan, he's such a great guy. But aside from that, I thought that TJ Miller made a great point when he said that he's almost too handsome and has like the perfect six pack and stuff that makes you think he's not funny and he's not relatable.
Can I just say,
you know,
I felt exactly the same way about Channing Tatum, and I was completely wrong about that as well. And then I saw him in the thing with Steve Carell, you know, where he plays brothers with the dude from Spotlight.
Not Foxcatcher.
The Hulk. What's his name?
I'm nodding. But
great guy. The guy plays the Hulk.
Gruffalo.
Yeah.
Gruffalo.
Mark Gruffalo. That's the guy. Yeah,
the Gruffalo.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oscar-nominated Mark Gruffalo.
That Oscar-nominated actor that was created by Julia Donaldson.
Yeah. I wish the Hulk turned into Gruffalo.
He's got
it. In the Avengers.
He's got purple prickles all over his back.
Gruffalo,
that guy.
Smash.
Yeah. Him and Channing Tatum were brothers in this really hard-hitting, tragic drama.
Yeah.
And I realised I'd totally taken him for granted.
Yeah, man.
And then I did exactly the same thing with Ryan. Because when I watched
Deadpool,
you're
always,
like,
taking Ryan Reynolds for granted, man. I mean,
I've done it for too long. And I take it all back. You know, here's an anecdote. There's a quote within this that has stayed with me ever since. So this is 2010, 2016 now. It's been 6 years. And I think about this line every single day when I'm working, when I'm shooting especially, which really ties into what you were saying about, you know, if people are saying something negative about this guy, what are they saying about me?
Yeah.
I'd done some music for the movie Attack the Block.
Yes.
And it was my first experience
movie.
Of movies. Right?
It was our boy Boyega, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, so I got to work with him, and I got to go to a premiere. You know, I'd never been to a movie premiere before. And I sat there with my wife, and he came on, the director Joe Cornish, with John Boyega and some of the other stars. And they had a little, announcement before the movie, as you do. And Joe said that back in the day, he used to do a Channel 4 show with Adam Buxton, where they'd take the piss out of Adam movies, you know. Real irreverent stuff, just tearing crap
spoof
movies
kind of
apart.
Stuff, yeah.
And he said, you know what? I don't know that I'm ever going to like publicly slate a movie, even if I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Because he said, doing this movie, the first movie that I've ever made, I realized how hard it is, or how hard it must be, to make a shit movie.
Mm-hmm.
Once I heard that, I was like, oh my god, that's it. Because when you're shooting, even if the show you're shooting is terrible, the amount of work that has to go into making even a really shit, the shittest film you can think of, the amount of work, the amount of people, the amount of bodies, the amount of hours, and then, you know, you spend all this time creating, and then there's just some dickhead on Twitter who's just like, oh, shit.
No, shit.
You know so I agree with that totally, man. And I feel like that's why we can't judge our career on numbers or on, you know, awards or on anything, even the snipes and the stuff that people say. It has to be about how we feel about the experience of actually making it, of the actual process of the
journey.
Of actually, and you know, to finish, to come to the end and say, I finished it with integrity and heart and I tried my best.
Yeah.
And I learned from it, and I know what its shortcomings are. And I know what I can improve on. And that is how I judge the movie. Not by it bombing or it by doing 500 mil, 600. That these things are bonuses, or not bonuses, but you know, I agree totally.
And also, no movie is one person. Even if you're talking about like someone like Tarantino, it's still not just. There's so much input from so many different people.
Truly,
there's so many different reasons why a film could work for you or not work for you. And there's never one person you can pick out and say, oh, this is all his fault. You don't know. You just don't know.
As much as you'd like to.
For real.
It was the guy in makeup.
I mean, I'm terrified. You know, my first movie's going to come out in August, and I know there's going to be a lot of eyes on it, and I know there'll be as much criticism as there is praise.
So for people that don't know, what's the film that's coming out?
The Ricky Gervais movie, Life on the Road. And you know how he polarizes people. There's always going to be half people that like it, half people that hate it. You're not going to get any people in the middle, really. He's that kind of dude. But even, you know, last week I watched it for the first time in the edit suite.
Is it finished?
No, they had a test screening after that.
Right.
So the movies that go through that process, there's obviously little tweaks and bits and pieces. And I've had my say as well in a long discussion with Ricky about what I thought. And, you know, those bits and pieces will be taken on board. But the main thing in my mind is watching it at 90 minutes. I know, because I was there, we've got 3 hours 20 of stuff, some of which is amazing, a lot of which may or may not end up in the final cut.
Yeah.
But people will never really appreciate, you know, what that process actually becomes, what it's like, how many people are involved.
Yeah. Months of your life, leaving your family. You know?
But it's also, I think I can come at this angle.
I'm scared, no question. I'm scared.
Yeah. It's a frightening thing. I come at this angle from doing so many music videos, even doing the one with you, Cheerio, you know, where we had so many people working with us, for us, you know, for 2 or 3 days, you know, like for no money, like just doing like so much hard work. And it's disheartening sometimes when you do get that off fucking comments. People don't realize. You're like,
but this is what I'm saying.
You don't realize. These guys are snorting sugar in the toilets at Hoxton Pony for this shit.
But my dude, were you dancing when people were telling you it was good?
No, I don't believe them.
No, but I'm being serious.
No, honestly, because I always listen to the negative.
But there's the
what was the thing you said about me the other day?
I see that on Twitter.
Something about a man with so many brilliant yet untreatable mental problems.
I think it's just very true, and I think that's what I want on my gravestone. So,
but I mean, we can't be hanging on to it. It's like,
no, you can't.
It's like Rudyard Kipling says. It's like you don't listen to the men's doubt. It's something about doubts, but make allowances for their doubting too. So you know the whole fact that like, yeah, I want to hear what your criticism of me is, so that I can see what I can do better or what I can learn from me. But
I punch you in the face.
No. But in the same way, when someone says to me like a compliment, I think to myself, give that to Tim Miller. Give that to like, go and have a look on the edit room floor and you won't compliment me.
Go
have a look at what it looked like before we went back for reshoots and you won't compliment me. Have a look at the deleted scenes that were shit and you won't compliment me. So I'm not going to cry, but I'm also not dancing. And you know, it's definitely that, bro.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I feel that. I just want everyone to love me, pretty much. That's it. Just so I can tell them they're wrong.
You were
nervous,
right.
Nervous laughter. So I want to talk a little bit about I Am Bear.
Yeah. Because we referenced it earlier, but I guess most of the listeners aren't going to know what that means.
Exactly.
Well, basically, I Am Bear is a children's picture book. It's for like sort of roughly 2 to 6 year old kids. It hasn't come straight out of the blue, because some people who followed my career will know like my start in TV came from creating my children's show for CBBC. So I've often created stuff for kids and different formats for kids. But when I had my own children, I really wanted to write or create something that would entertain them. Yep. It took me so long to get to this point that my kids are too old to give a shit about I Am Bear, but it's all good. But yeah, you know, it's like your sort of textbook vintage bold colored picture book, basically. But it's about a bear who's a prick.
It's me and my son's favorite fucking kids book, like We Have a Plan. Like, it is literally in our top five ever. You know, we love it so much, and we love the video.
Oh, and thank you, man.
And just what a little fucker the bear is, like, but we can relate because he's just mischievous.
Well, exactly, and you know, I wanted him to be like a 6 bordering on 7 year old boy, you know. And if you're a parent of a boy around that age or above, then you'll know that there's an age for kids, boys and girls, to be fair, where they learn empathy, and it comes around that time. I mean, they learn how to be loving and all of that, but they learn true empathy and selflessness sort of around the 7-year-old mark, which is when you learn that you're not immortal. Before that, you actually genuinely think you're just going to live forever, which is an amazing thing. I wish we could all go back to it. There's a build-up to that where kids really act out, and that's what I wanted to reflect, because I was reading a lot of books to my kids when they were really little, where it was just like, and then Sally apologized and she was never selfish again, ever. And you're just like, what the fuck kind of ending is that?
Yeah, I know Sally. She's a bitch.
That is not what my kids are experiencing in school. Do you know what I mean? Or in the playground or on the street. So
some people don't learn.
I just wanted to have like a story for really little kids where there was just no comeuppance for like bad behavior.
Yeah.
And then the kids can say in story time with their parents, like, oh, I think that's not, it's not right or whatever. They can make up their own minds about the morals of it, but I'm not going to be the dude to go, oh, and this should happen if you ever do this, which is what I hear in a lot of kids' books.
But again, it's like the superhero movies where they're trying to like,
well, that's what I like,
be all
Deadpool.
Holy and righteous in their books. But actually what you guys did was just did something realistic, which was great.
The sequel's written and it's just been approved by the publishers literally a couple weeks ago.
That's great news.
So we're just getting the first sketches together. This is the second one I drew myself.
What?
Yeah, which is insane, but obviously not publishable drawings.
Okay, right.
That is not good enough.
But you'll give them to Sav.
Yeah, Sav's working on them right now. Because what I found
is... Ghost wrote his bars.
Technically, yeah. Whoa. Yeah. I'm glad that's on tape now because I can throw that in his face.
We were just talking about ghostwriting. This is basically Rhymefest writing Jesus Walks for Kanye. This is how it's happened.
Yeah. I mean, you know,
he did a wicked job.
Ultimately,
I love his
film. Ultimately, he kind of ghostwrote my bars for the first book because I wasn't thinking about a bear at all. I was writing a story at the time about a girl with like untamable frizzy hair, just based on the you know, anybody who's like in a mixed race relationship or black families, you know, you never see these kids represented in picture books where their hair is just bonkers and you got to deal with it. So I was writing a story about that, ended up getting a bit too worthy and I wasn't really about it. And then Sav just sent me these sketches of this bear and he'd laid out like half a story kind of thing. It's just like, this bear, he's dangerous. I think you can do something with it. So in actuality, it really came from him. So now I'm kind of returning the compliment, you know. But I've realized I can't write a picture book without pictures.
Yeah.
So
you need his guidance.
Every bar I write, I'm drawing, I'm sketching out a thing.
That's great.
My drawings are funny. Like, as long as there's no horses, I'm good. I'm all right.
Why can't you draw horses?
What's going on with horses?
No. Everything that's like bigger than... like a cat just looks like the same weird animal.
Hold on, aren't camels, bears bigger horses? Than horses?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, but the bear is kind of,
it's
like
got human form.
Yeah, it's just like a human with a cute sort of Mickey Mouse face. Yeah. The irreverence of writing for small kids is very freeing.
Mm. In what sense?
Well, you can kind of just go for broke. Like, we think, a lot of us, especially those without kids, we think when we meet a small child, we have to be big and wacky. They don't have all the points of reference that an adult has, but they have an imagination that we can't even fathom without mind altering drugs.
Yeah.
Like what small children are seeing is, it's just a massive, you ever see a baby who's just like this?
All the time, cracked
out. Reason they're like that is because everything they're seeing is fucking for the first time in their life.
Yeah.
They're tripping out. And that lasts for at least 4 or 5 years.
But I understand what you mean about coming, you know, that you have to properly speak to them on a level and with honesty.
You've got to speak to them on a level.
And they'd rather
you
just chat
to them.
When
people speak to my kids, they put their hands on their knees like, hello.
No.
I'm like, bitch, she's 10. Yeah. What the fuck, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I was just going to say, a mate of mine, like, I was like witness to when she gave her baby ice cream for the first time. Now that is just a moment to behold.
They have high sugar content or anything like that.
It's
at
like
a really early age, bonkers.
It's just like taking Mandy for the first time.
Yeah.
Apparently so. allegedly. Ice cream's never as good as... I mean, that's total bullshit. It's always good.
And there are new flavours that they're bringing out.
I know.
Whereas Mandy still tastes like
shit. I had a cinnamon latte flavour and it blew my fucking
of
mind
ice cream
last week. Yeah, man. It was
so it's coffee and cinnamon.
I mean, really, it's more cinnamon. It's like nutmeggy, kind of autumn-y, kind of Christmas biscuit kind of vibe.
Autumn
Christmas biscuit. Christmas biscuity.
Christmas in autumn.
Christmas biscuit flavour.
They're like a third of the year.
Wide-ranging flavour. Wow.
It's kind of like spring, summer, autumn,
like
winter
flavour.
September
flavor. To January.
Yeah.
Yes. But no, it was fucking slamming. So yeah, you know, we can. I found the dragon with that guy.
What can you tell us about the model? if anything.
Because you were very excited about this. This is something that you're really, really happy about.
Yeah, I mean, this is like the model and Deadpool for me are day zero. You know, in the sense that now, like, I feel like this is the beginning. You know, everything else is the apprenticeship. Everything else was the education as such.
Because Transporter is obviously huge, but it's not really yours. Do you know what I mean? Every single thing you did in that movie, people are looking at you going, all right, but this is Statham's. Yeah.
And all the other stuff I've done as well, you know, before that was, you know, what, except for Ill Manners, I would qualify in a sense as like, you know, mercenary. Now I feel like, I've made two projects that I'm proud of, you know, and so the aim now is not to make one of these projects made 600 mil in the box office. The other one came out the day before and didn't get US distribution and hasn't got UK distribution. Only came out in Korea, Turkey, Bulgaria, Poland and Denmark and all these countries, right? But they both mean exactly the same.
Yeah,
so for me, the aim now is to have that feeling that both of them movies gave me. Not the scale, not the scope, not the dough that I got
for
me.
Exactly.
So that's the aim. And to feel this way coming out of them again, talking earlier on about the process of their like integrity and heart and like doing things the right way, you know, and leaving no stones unturned. Both of them felt that way. So the model's a beautiful little story, man. I mean, like, literally, there were days on Deadpool where our second unit had 290 people.
What?
In the crew, okay? 290 people that's in the crew. Crazy. And we were on gimbals and 40-foot things. With 100 grand.
Sorry, what's a gimbal?
A gimbal is like a platform.
It's making me hungry.
You can't eat it, bro.
It's platform.
Oh, fuck.
I'd like to see you try. It's 40 foot up in the air, and it can drop down. So the scene at the end on the heli carrier where we fight,
it can give you real range of
angles.
Really suddenly, and I guess it just has a huge effect on the viewer. Like it's visceral.
Yeah.
Well, it's actually real. And, so what they see is not us going, "Whoa, we're falling." It's us going, "Shit." And your body just stops.
I was actually going to ask you about how the fuck they did that because you're sliding all over the shop.
Yeah, we actually slid. I spent a whole fucking day rolling around on a gimbal and like, Jesus, you know. Christ. But my point was to go back is that, you know, some days we were there with 290 people in the second unit days, and on the model we never had more than 26 people in the crew. We only had one camera. It sat on top of Petrus, our little Swedish 25-year-old. DP's shoulder the whole time, he's just shaking around. We didn't use much makeup, bad posture, spots, hair was all over the gaff.
It's a drama, right? Because I literally don't know anything about it.
I mean, it's a romantic tragedy.
You reference it in
A
rom trage.
It's a rom trage, I mean, basically, it's like this 18-year-old girl comes over from Copenhagen and she comes to Paris and she's a young model and she's trying to like find her way. She dreams of being a model and she goes... She gets an agent. She gets sent on her first shoot, and it's with this fashion photographer from London called Shane White, which is my character. And basically, we become romantically involved. The first or second act is like really beautiful, and then in very Scandinavian fashion, things go really badly wrong.
And
it gets fucking. It ends up literally when I was watching, I was like, "This is like Ill Manners again. This is like, this is almost not fun to watch for a lot of people." They'll be like, fuck, this is a kick in the bollocks. But you know, the way I feel is like, you know, for you to say to me earlier on that Deadpool was the most enjoyable experience.
Yeah, it really was.
What I take from that is, first of all, I take the compliment, but then I break it down and I say the actual most important word there is enjoyable. So there could have been, when I went to see The Revenant, I felt like it was the most immersive experience I've ever had.
Yeah. I mean, that opening sequence where you're walking through the stream, you felt you were in the stream. Yeah.
Yeah. So each movie and each piece, like each song, like each book, should have its own energy and its own, word. So the word for the model is not enjoyable. That will not be the most enjoyable thing. It's a window into the interesting world of fashion in high fashion.
And when's it out?
In Paris. We haven't got UK or US distribution.
Are you serious?
So we went to Gothenburg. We got Best Cinematography Award. We went to Rotterdam Film Festival. We're doing a lot of the festivals. But this is the nature of this. And, you know, to me, I describe it like a party where none of us brought our mobiles. Where we said, nah, we're not going to take pictures, right? And we all came like this in tracksuit bottoms and American Apparel or whatever.
That's dope.
You know? So we remember that night. We say, yeah, I remember that night when we went to that thing. We had a beautiful time. It stays in our heart forever. Yeah. And it was special like that. In another way, remember that time when me and you went to the Kill Your Friends thing? We both had suits on and we looked dapper and we have pictures of us looking young and pretty for when we're old and ugly, right? You know, each one doesn't have to be the same. It has to be about the feeling. And I must say, like, I'm at this place where it's like about a constant state of the feeling. It's about feeding the fire rather than the actuality of the movies coming out.
And are you, the first part of the question is, did you ever foresee yourself in this position in your life? But the second part is, do you genuinely believe you can keep that going for the rest of your career? Do you know what I'm saying? Because when you see like Robert De Niro in Dirty Grandpa, and it's just like foreseeing such a hero in such a piece of shit, when it's just, it's really upsetting. Feels so unnecessary. And I understand that people's lifestyles change. Like when I see Johnny Depp in the sausage, whatever it's called, the advert for the perfume. I think, what's the need for this when he's done Pirates of the Caribbean, which is, you know, made hundreds and millions of dollars for him personally. Mm-hmm. I think, well, his needs have changed. You know, if he's bought an island or whatever, and he's got to keep the electricity on in the island, maybe Savoy's or sausage will pay for the electricity on the island.
The question is, why do something that's not got creative merit when
I know that from Ed. I don't need to know the answer to that. But
no, I mean more for these other folks, whether it makes you wonder, because I definitely imagine the same thing. Why is someone, you know, in a Nicole Kidman in an insurance advert or something like that, when clearly, like, you
because
know.
I relate everything to all I know about myself, because that's how you have to go through life. You try not to judge people, but you do compare. Yeah. You think, well, what would I would do in that position, right? Mm-hmm. And I look at the Sauvage advert. I look at all fucking every advert right now. Willem Dafoe, man, you know. And I think about the stuff that I've turned down. Oh. These panel shows that keep hollering at me, I don't want to do it because I hate the shows. Yeah. And it's like, I always said to myself, I said it on that song we made together, don't make a meal for someone that you'd never eat yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, if you're not going to eat it, why the fuck, why would you cook it for a group of your so-called friends? So
I hear that. And I feel like it comes down to like,
because you're going to get some big offers.
So to answer your question, I already have, and I've already turned them down.
We're from a different place. Am I wrong? We're not drama school guys.
I'm the same. Yeah, 100%. But by the same token, you know, I understand this gift that is here now, and I understand this privileged position that I'm in, and I'm graciously, humbly thankful for the opportunity. But I don't need this, bro. I never needed this before. Yeah. I don't need this now.
You've hustled.
I don't
need this tomorrow.
But what I do need is a constant state of sacredness, in a sense that, without sounding pretentious, is that every song I made back in the day, I made for it to be the best song.
Yeah.
When we made Let the Smoke Dance, I didn't care about whether it comes out on CD that comes on this small thing.
I
wanted to do this whole thing about, I sat there watching Smoke Dance out of an ashtray, like, this is this feeling of sacredness. When I went art school, I hated the idea of being an actual artist. I was like, I would be a fraud anyway. I can't paint a proper still life, but I love painting. And it's like being here now. It's like, I ain't here for that. So to answer your question, no. I never thought I would be here. Yeah? I never ever thought I'd be here. You know, I thought I was just going to, you know, just like you. I thought I was going to be a rapper, you know what I mean, and do my thing. Then after that, it was like I started my teaching business, and I was like, no, this is a wicked hustle. This is a great hustle, and I love this, and I enjoy it, and I'm an upstanding member of society. I'm respected, and I like it, and I'm making, you know, good money. So then when this came along, it was like, well, this is a chance now for me to truly fulfill my creative needs that I've always felt, and that possibly in that kind of 18-month period, 2-year period where I fell out of love with UK hip hop, and vice versa with UK hip hop with me, you know, and fell into this kind of business and changing lifestyle, you know, and grew up, you know, then what was lacking, I was like, boom, I've got this now. So by the same token, I'm going to use every opportunity to learn and grow in a way that these people who have been here before me, like Ryan, me and him did an interview together, and he was like, I've been acting for 26 years. I was thinking, rah, my first movie came out 3 years ago, bro. You know, and it ain't a race. It's a marathon, you know, and he's done some wonderful things. And
do you think he feels the same way as we did when someone goes, yeah, I wrote my first bar like a year ago, and here's my first song?
In what sense?
Because you know how, like, you know how sometimes we look at people that have just started rapping and then they release a record and we're like, you bastard, I've been doing this for a long fucking time.
Yeah, I think to a point, I mean, I think he sees me, you know, I'm a person who's on set and I'm the person who is asking questions. I'm the person who's like, you know, in the green room, you know, finding out about people, inquisitive, learning about people's processes. I always just want to take one thing, just one thing. There's one gem I can learn from you that's really good, and one thing I don't like how you move, that I'm going to copy that as well to not do that, or vice versa, you know. And so, you know, Ryan, he must, all of these people, whenever they see me there, they must all see me like, you know, all right, it's not my first barbecue, but you know, I'm green behind the ears, bro. I'm green behind the ears on so many levels. And there's, you know,
not entirely sure what that means, but I like it.
That means he's new.
I'm new to the game.
Cool. Where's that come from, etymologically? Green. Just like,
well, it's like a banana, you know. It's like it's not.
It's like he's
this,
right?
This is an acting terminology.
Nah, this man, this is a life thing.
A banana.
When you're green, you're new. Like it's like an unripe fruit.
Babies aren't born green,
and bananas don't have ears.
Oh, it's just all a good point.
Okay, maybe there's too many analogies tied into
but
one.
But anyway, you know, you can see that I'm fresh, bro. But you know what? By the same token, it's like, you know, if you're open to things and if you're new to things, like, I feel so inspired by watching someone like Ryan on set and seeing how he understands every single part of the set. Yeah. He knows everything, bro. I'm still learning. I actually want to keep a certain level of naivety because I enjoy that. Because I can actually just concentrate on my job and stay in a fantasy. But I'm also slowly trying to turn the screw and learn. But by the same token, sorry to interrupt your interruption. But by the same token, another person who I'm as inspired by as Ryan Reynolds is Ocean Wisdom.
Yeah.
Because this kid is super young and this kid is coming out with bars that are like our friend Pavan, like Kalashnikov, like Kaiser, you know, like a lot of the best spitters who had the best flows, but he's new and he's fresh. It's like Joey Badass, and so, but he's green behind the ears, and I'm hearing him, and I met him the first time, and I was trying to kick game to him when we was there, and I was trying to kick some game. I was like, yo, me and you, we both need to improve. You know, neither of us can rest. I was like, don't think you're there now. Neither of us have arrived. I said, we're like Raheem Sterling. Like people might think a little something. No, we ain't proved anything. And then when I come away, I thought, right, maybe I was trying to like kick too much, put that on him too much, you know. But at the same token, it's like,
and that was after our annual Christmas dinner.
Yeah, we were fucked up.
We were pretty drunk.
I was mushing like a madman, like the old school. But you know, but anyway, my point is like, I'm as inspired by the young newcomers and their freshness as I am by the old guys and their incredible experience, you know. And I'd like to think that Ryan is the same way, and you know, Ocean is the same way.
It's funny what you're saying about not knowing about all parts of a shoot, because literally for the first time last week I started hanging back after the crew show, you know, when they start talking sizes and shots. Because what all actors do is, as soon as you've done the crew show, then, sorry, for the people that don't know this terminology, basically you're about to shoot a scene.
Yeah.
So you'll rehearse it with just the actors, the director, the DOP, maybe one or two others, you know, and then once they're happy with that, you'll have a crew show. So the entire crew will come in and you'll do it all again. So everybody knows what's going on.
Right.
And then there's this moment where the director will call exactly what shots he or she wants, right? What sizes.
So it's kind of like a dress rehearsal.
How many angles. Yeah, like a dress rehearsal. And at that point, crucially to what I'm saying, at that point, you know, the third AD or the first will say, let's get the talent, you know, comfortable and warm. Get them somewhere. Give them some time.
Let's fluff everybody.
You know, get them coming. Give them a nice drink, some nice food. Give them a really comfy chair. Yeah. And you're gone.
Yeah.
So then for the first time last week, I think because it was a scene that was very emotional for my character, I was really more switched on than normal. You know, sometimes you're just doing a bit of business.
Yes.
You're just arriving or you're leaving or whatever. Mm. You know, you don't have any lines or whatever it is. And I was just, I really wanted to nail it. Mm. So I just held back and I was better prepared for that scene than anything I've ever done before.
So you found it really helped? Like it really helped your process?
Massively. To understand more of what everybody's job is. Mm. is going to make you a better actor.
And as actors, we internalize everything. So our whole thing that's going on in let's say the scenes here, and Corin is the camera. We're only thinking about each other, about the energy, listening, and all of that stuff. But actually, what it is the three-way dance with the camera. And also the lights in there as well. But it's like, there's no point me and you feeling this moment that was so intense, but we're not opening up to camera.
Yeah, the whole time you've got to not be self-conscious. Well, it's quite tricky.
You have to be close with every single one of the crew.
Yeah,
you have to like, because otherwise it changes the entire atmosphere of what you're doing as well. Because it's a work environment.
My first thing was a class thing, I think. Because I learned how to act on my children's show, on CBBC. And I credit a lot of the leadership that I got and the tutoring that I got to the DP rather than the various directors I worked with, because he was always saying to
me, was it the same DP the whole time?
Yeah, the entire time. Yeah. We had loads of different directors, but I got loads of good things from all the different directors, but it was the DP who really, like, he'd take, because I guess we got to know each other so well, he'd always take me to one side and say, this little thing you're doing is, I can see you don't think you're good, but this little thing that you do is amazing.
Yeah.
And let me tell you why, you know. And he was brilliantly technical about something that I thought was completely like an artistic thing.
And sorry, for those, because we keep mentioning DP.
Oh, yeah, sorry, director of photography. So this is the guy, this is how green I was at that point, behind the ears.
Behind the ears.
I genuinely thought before I started shooting that kid's show back in whenever it was, 2009, that the director held the camera.
Yeah.
I genuinely thought that. Same. I had no idea that there was a whole separate dude.
Like, DP to me was a porno term. I didn't know.
Yeah, whatever. You know, so like, I worked with the actors, obviously, because they were the closest people to me, like physically, you know, day to day. But I fucked with the sparks and the carpenters.
Yeah, of course. Bro, this is what,
because they were all like working class guys. Yeah. Like, you know, and they were the first one. Still to this day, my two best friends in the whole world of film and television are a clapper loader and a boom operator.
There's so many like terms in films that I had no idea what the fuck.
I don't know what a best boy is, bro. So
what the fuck is a best boy? What the hell is it? I didn't know what a gaffer was.
Ed will fill us in.
No, I actually don't know. A best boy.
He's a best.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, right. The best thing that I remember, we had this chat, like, we sat after Comic Con last year. We were both in LA, and we sat on the rooftops.
Oh, man, that was beautiful,
man. A celebration steak. After going shooting for the day, we went shooting.
Why wasn't I FaceTimed?
Oh, shit.
Because it was about 5 in the morning.
It probably was. And we went to a shooting range. It was fucking amazing. And then we sat on a rooftop at the London Hotel
in Hollywood, West Hollywood.
And we had steak. And I was talking to you about acting, and you know, I was picking your brains on how you moved it, because I've always, you know, you've always had this character, you know. Don't worry, I'm not blowing smoke. This is not where it's going. You've always had this character that I knew you could, you know. Doc would agree that you're performers.
Ill Manners was never a surprise for me when I saw Ed up there.
Precisely. I mean, I used to say back in the day that you did a thing called skranking.
Yeah.
Right. That was what I said.
I remember that.
I was like, because he's fucking skranking again. You'd find your way out of a situation by just being like, hey.
Or into a situation,
like, you know, where we got pulled over in Ipswich, like, you know, like all this stuff, and you'd just be like, that's cool.
Let me skrank him.
I suppose the audience or the people listening to this, probably not that clear. They probably just think you've, like, grabbed two people from the world of entertainment.
We've known each other for over a decade.
I met Ed through a hip-hop group called Foreign Beggars possibly 13 years ago, maybe more. Mm-hmm. I think probably more than that.
I mean, it's 2016, so the first track we did together must have been 10 years ago, 11 years ago.
Yeah, at least.
Maybe 12.
At the very least. But, I mean, we were hanging out, or we were together at raves and whatnot. I reckon around 02, 03, maybe 04. I remember hanging out with you in like Cricklewood.
Yeah,
that was over 10 years ago. And Corin, the last skeptic here, obviously, you know, a hip hop stalwart. But we don't actually go back that far, which is quite
very
crazy.
Very recent. Well, I mean, I say recent,
like 6 years, 5 years or so.
Less than that. It was about 2012.
Really?
Yeah.
2011, 2012.
Yeah.
It was.
I actually knew his brother before I knew him through stand up.
Right. Yeah, my brother Tiernan.
Funny fucker.
So yeah.
And then me and you have known each other since I came to Guildford to do a radio show with White Fang or Doobie, and that was...
But I didn't meet you then for the first time.
That was the first time I met you, 01. Nah. Or 01 or 00. Even, yeah.
Through White Did Fang. He have hair?
Nah, I was always always a bald cunt.
But he didn't have a beard, though. Now this whole beard thing's recent.
Well, it's weird. I look at photos of me now without a beard, and it's... I mean, honestly...
Yeah, I mean, that one you posted the other day, no. Throwback Thursday, yeah, no, it's no, just no. disturbing. It's
awful. Is it huge?
I look.
No, he's got no beard. Yeah. He's got some hair. Yeah. He's really thin.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, who Ill. The fuck is this guy?
I know. The thing is, like, without a beard, I look like a Mr. Potato Head, but without any features on it. Like, I just don't... like, I just... I have... A beard gives me context, all right? So that's... without it, it's a scary thing. So we've known each other a long fucking time. Obviously, yeah. we did a tour in Switzerland in, like, 2006.
With Verb T of the Four Hours.
Verb T.
Who I'm very big fan of.
Yeah, like, you know, we've known each other a long time. I mean, from round these ways. From going to my parents' house and beeping, waking everyone up.
Yeah.
Like, I'm outside.
Here's the reason it never surprised me when someone said to me, have you seen this Ed Skrein guy? Mm. Like, you know, he's this big movie star, you know. Mm. I know that guy. Oh. Like, it didn't surprise me because he was such... I remember how intense a character he was the first time I met him. Mm. And
we're talking like he's not here.
I know.
You know, there's a reason why me and... my creative endeavors in my early 20s, you know, weren't as positive and progressive as this endeavor now. There's a reason, you know what I mean? There's a reason.
And I think you channeled a lot of your energy in strange places, like...
Back then?
Yeah.
I was on a mad one. And it was beautiful in the sense that, you know, it's beautiful when you can kind of say, come out the other side. I mean, it wasn't like I hit real lows or anything, but it's a beautiful thing when you can say that you've... explored all of these emotional avenues.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
But at the same time, don't you think, like...
Look at the arsenal that I have to draw on. No, serious, bruv. Like, yeah, bruv, I know tears, I know fears, I know...
Something else that rhymes.
Cheers.
Green. You know what I mean? I know tears, I know fears, I know green behind the ears. That's what you need.
There you go.
But serious. No, but 100% I'm behind serious. You. Because
and also, there is a... Sorry to interrupt your interruption again, but there is a time and a place for everyone to grow up. And I've seen it with my friends. It's like gentrification. There's a wave, you know, there's a point, there's a peak, and then it starts going down. And there is a point, and you better know, especially in this unforgiving metropolis that will chew you up and spit you out without blinking, you better know when to grow up in this city. Mm. And you better know when to just hold it down. You better know how to swallow your pride. Mm. You better know how to learn what's really important. And I'm so thankful that I've learned that now, because I didn't know that back then. I was delusional. I had a fucking wicked time.
Yeah.
I had such a great time, my bro.
And I know 40-year-olds who are still...
Yeah, I mean, and I'm 32.
On
I'm
the block, 33, doing some dumb
almost
shit.
Almost all of my peoples, almost all of them are still doing that. You know what I mean?
Or,
you know, and they're not even half, most of them haven't even seen Deadpool or nothing like that. And it's all good. It is what it is. You know?
I can't believe they haven't seen Deadpool. Okay, you're in jail. Now, listen, what I was going to say is that, like, from way back, tangent upon tangent, is that as we were sitting on this roof in LA, not calling Doc, that we, I said, What's the best bit of advice that you kind of that when you're going in on the transport, you got your first, you know, you're the guy, you are the guy in this film. You know, what do you do when you walk onto set and you've got all these hundreds of people there, and you're like, well, I got one good piece of advice that helped me out, and like,
and the world should know it,
and the world should know it, because you know what, I'm not gonna lie, like, whenever I'm going on stage now, like, if I get a little bit worried, I think about it.
Any situation, bruv. When you're meeting new
people,
your girl's parents, when you're going into a business meeting with people, with CEOs or with this or that, you need to remember this.
Yeah, and it's probably the greatest bit of advice that I've ever been given my entire life.
So my mentor, my acting mentor, is an incredible guy called Martin Ledwith. He's an amazing Scottish guy. He's an acting coach that lots of people use, and he's been fantastic for me. And he's a big fan of, like, Hopkins and Brando specifically. And he tells me this story about Brando. And he says, like, Brando's godson was also his nephew. Now, I'm going to paraphrase this badly, but was his nephew. And he was starting to get into acting, you know. And he'd booked a little gig, you know, a little TV gig or something like that. And he wanted to get into it. But, like, his uncle it's Marlon Brando. Mm. And so he was going to his house to watch the game, and his dad said to him, you know, Uncle Marlon does not like talking about acting. So whatever you do, just go and have a nice time. Don't ask him about acting. So he's gone, all right, Dad, whatever, shut up. You know, he's gone along, probably not in that accent, but, and he's gone along and he sat down, he's watching the game and he's looking at his uncle like, and Marlon turns to him, he says, look, I know you want to ask me, you know, just don't, man, just don't, let's just have a nice day. He's like, okay. Just please, one question. He goes, all right, come on. He says, how do I know when I'm in the zone, when I'm really in the moment? He says, because when I'm acting, I'm aware that the camera's there, that the lights are there. I'm aware that my next line is this. And yeah, while they're saying the line, I'm thinking in the next line. He says, how do I know when I'm present? And he says, you're not going to like it. He says, just tell me, please, please, uncle, you're not going to like it. He says, I check my arsehole.
And there it is.
He says, what?
That's it.
He said, I check my arsehole. If my arsehole is relaxed, then I am completely relaxed. And I cannot be in the moment and present if I'm not relaxed.
Wow.
Now, what I do before every take, especially all my scenes in the workshop with Ajax.
Are we talking about physically checking or just feeling?
No,
just
feeling.
Just like, you know.
So this is the process. This is the process, right? You stand there, you put your weight in your heels. Yeah. And I urge you just to try it and decide you don't like it.
Okay.
And everyone out there, whether you're acting or not.
Everyone in the room's heels deep.
Bro, so I'm back on set tomorrow, man. Yeah. I'm going to try this shit.
Okay, so don't tell no one about it until you've done it. Now, you're standing there, you put your weight in your heels, okay? Mm-hmm. Just stand up, then just let your hands hang down. Mm-hmm. Let all the blood rush to your hands and try and make your hands just heavy, full up of blood. Next thing, find your center of gravity and just make sure, okay, yeah, I'm not tensed in any way. And then you'll notice that you're holding your breath. Mm. Like before almost every set, you'll realize you're holding, you realize I'm holding my breath. So you'll go, just relax. Next thing you do is just check, make sure your arsehole's completely relaxed. Because also...
And it's not. It's not.
Your arsehole and your diaphragm, you know, all of this is so close together. You just need to be completely relaxed. Okay, so just relax. Make sure your arsehole's relaxed. Mm-hmm. Check your arsehole. But then most importantly, after you've checked your arsehole, the most important thing to do is say, fuck it.
Mm.
Fuck all of that. Fuck everything I've ever learned. Get the fuck out there. Wow. Yeah? And that... is how you check your arsehole.
That's incredible.
Check your arsehole and fuck it.
Check your arsehole and fuck it.
That's straight from Brando.
That is Brando advice.
And I'm telling you, you need, if you haven't learned your lines, then you won't be able to do it. So you do have to do other stuff. If you don't know the scene, if you don't know the character, if you're not relaxed, if you're not, you know, if you're not relaxed going into the whole day, you can't just magic it by relaxing your palms and your ass. But if you do the homework and you do that, believe me, it's a wonderful thing. And I find myself in social situations that be intense, like, you know, whether it's at your book launch and I'm standing there thinking there's three people I don't know them. Oh, hey, how are you? I'm an agent or whatever. Just like, no, man, just relax.
Yeah, or the supermarket, you know, like,
and the bottom line is, the bottom line is we
have tight arsehole.
Is always, the other thing I always think is, why not? Or why the fuck not, rather? Is, you know, it seems like a lot of our friends and all that are so like, you know, and us, we become so paralyzed by fear, you know, and it's fine to feel, to have insecurities. It's not fine to let them rule you.
No.
It's not fine to let them run you. It's fine to understand them. But to when you hear them, you say, check my asshole, fuck it, and get the fuck out there. You know what I mean? And take control. That's how I feel.
Do you think there's a link somehow between... I mean, we should probably move away from the asshole for the next point I'm about to make. But do you think there's a link between the sort of fuck it element, the fuck it philosophy, and the fact that a strange number of British rappers have become quite decent actors?
I can say from a personal point of view that the fuck it thing, 100%, is that the mixture of the manners that my mum and dad taught me to be able to treat the grip and the director in exactly the same way, which is just maximum respect until you show me otherwise.
Yeah.
And this whole feeling of, fuck it, this is, let me take the stage, come. I've got this cypher. And then I'll come out the cypher and think, fuck, that two people were much better than me. But I at least went in there feeling like it was mine. Yeah.
to have like this UK rap kind of thing that we came from. UK rap, no one gave a fuck what we did. We did it because we loved it. Mm. And like,
hold up, no. The mainstream, we gave a fuck. It meant the fucking world to us. It meant the world to me, bro.
It still fucking does. High Plains Anthem still does. But what I'm saying is that like this, you know, this thing is a beautiful thing. Like the fact that you guys are doing what you're doing, it's incredible, and you've come from that, and it's something that connects all of us, even though, you know, we're in different, slightly different things, you know, even when it's where we chat to Will Poulter or Craig Roberts or whoever, where they're just like, yeah, we just love those records, like, but you know, bro, it's a rap.
Why the fuck not?
Yeah.
But why not? Mm. Why should people that came from a move from a underground movement that was a subculture, why not? Why are the skills that we have not transferable in that sense?
Yeah.
Why, especially when we're making subversive shit?
Yeah.
Even if it's a kid's book, it's still against the fucking grain. Mm-hmm. I said it in Mind Out, you know? Watching my brethren's on stage makes me so proud. Mm. You know what I mean? And that's really how I feel. You know, I watched Doc, you know? I sat there with Holly.
Dempsey.
Yeah.
Big up Holly.
At the show, and, you know, I was so proud, bro. I was so proud, you know? I was so proud when I started watching your little YouTube bits, you know what I mean? I'm so proud of, like, you know, me and my son watched the video that you and Justin filmed, Michael Payne, in London Fields, you know? It makes me so proud, you know? This is the constant state of inspiration, of hunger, of desire to create that I'm talking about. Yeah. Whether it comes from a video that you only, that was one take and you did four times in London Fields and then gave it to someone who did graphics for free, or whether it's a YouTube video that you don't make any money from, that you did a show you only made two bills out of, or whether it's a Ocean Wisdom cipher that you did on Itch FM, or whether it's a short film that I did back in the day that I got paid 75 quid for, or whether it's a Fox movie that made $600 million, it don't mean shit. It's about the inspiration. Exactly. You know what I mean? It's about that constant state of inspiration. Yeah. So for me, the idea that this can all work in everybody's favor, and that I can inspire Doc can inspire me, and vice versa with you, my bro, that's the most beautiful thing.
I agree. Well, happiness is not quantifiable, and especially isn't like by money, because happiness isn't a continual thing.
Bro, I'm trying to be spiritually. It's a moment. I'm trying to be spiritually happy first.
Yeah.
And secondly, I'm trying to make myself fucking financially happy, but spiritually happy, yes.
I'm just trying to fit in enough hours for pornography in a day. That's all I'm trying to do.
There's always time for that. I mean, you got time for that? Don't lie, man. You know
what I mean? I think this is a good moment to take a break. Because I need a comfort break. I've got to take a piss.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Thanks for Trying podcast, episode one. We've had our piss break, so now for the brand new tradition of having a shot of Patron before we continue our discussion.
Yeah, hook me up. I have mine in a mug.
They're quite actually floral, not floral. They're lovely mugs. I'm not even measuring this. You guys are talking amongst
yourselves. Although we have had a slight discussion during the piss break, because I didn't need one, of whether Patron is pronounced Patron.
Where's it from?
I would assume it's Mexican. Would you want to have a look on the label?
Is that what it is?
Listen, I'm already quite drunk, so I have no idea what I poured. I just poured quite a lot.
Yeah, it's from Mexico.
Right.
I'm going with
Patron.
Right, gentlemen, here we go. Salud.
Cheers. Salud. Santé.
Llamas.
Thanks for trying the podcast. Brush. Thank you very much. I appreciate
cheers,
it.
Cheers, man.
Is it straight down?
Delicious. The nectar of the gods.
You two just carry on.
I think Doc's balls just dropped. I think that's happened. Hey. So we were talking a little bit earlier about, because obviously it is very important, like despite all the wonderful things that you guys are doing now, like we've come from this place, we've come from UK rap, we've come from performing, and some of these shows are, that we've done, that I've DJ'd at, that I've performed at as well, that you guys have rapped at, you know, sometimes some of them, me and Skrine have done, Ed have performed together.
Yeah.
We've had some fucking nightmare shows.
Oh, Jesus.
Like, UK rap shows, I mean, aside from your comedy experience of, like, nightmare shows, you've had some UK...
Oh, man.
Yeah, but we've had nightmare days on set.
Yeah,
but there's
differing levels.
You look at it with
different levels.
No, but you look at it with rose tinted glasses. But I've done like low budget UK shit on like days where I'm literally there. Like, I'm like, this is like the UK hip hop days when like we would drive somewhere, we'd get 300 quid, we'd drive it, it cost 70 quid in petrol.
Yeah.
So between five of us, we'll share the rest of it.
I'll spend at least 30 quid on snacks.
Yeah, we spent money on ginsters and bloody Ribenas and red stripes in the service station. Yep. Before you know it, we're going home with 30 quid.
Mate.
And it's 3 o'clock in the morning and I've got to be at work at 9. Like, I know...
Luxury. Let me tell you about my first year in stand-up, bro.
That was luxury.
Let me tell you about my first year in stand-up. My first few gigs in stand-up, it would be like 20 quid, 25 quid to perform. That was your fee.
Yeah,
and it would be anywhere in the UK. There was times I'd drive to Stafford. It would cost me 40 quid in petrol. I'd have to get a room off of Late Rooms. This is way before Airbnb. Get a room from Late Rooms for like 50, 60, 70 quid, sometimes 100 quid.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I was at a loss before I even said one word on the mic.
Yeah.
And I died on stage. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And then just fucking drive back.
You know, I think there's something important here, and I think that there's something again which relates into what we're doing now, in the sense that what we used to do was primarily for the love,
yeah,
and it wasn't about the dough, and it's a bonus to make a little p, to make a little something nowadays, or more than a little p.
I'd like to think that I haven't done anything just for the money, but I blatantly have. Mm. But when it comes to the shit that I really love, the acting, the comedy, and the songwriting, I've literally, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of pounds I've pissed up the wall. I just haven't taken on board.
And how much shit we've done for free. It's like the song that you did with your little bro, you know. It wasn't about that, was it? Yeah. It was about the sacredness. You wanted to speak
look at
to
the vocal sample that I used. An actor, a friend of mine, Daniel Kaluuya. I don't know if you've come across him. Incredible actor.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
And it was a quote from a series called Black Miller. Black Mirror.
And that was shot up a chun.
Fuck it out. It's getting to that stage.
Fantastic.
Black Mirror. Written
my favorite
by
TV series of the
Charlie
last,
Brooker.
Like 10 years.
Dark. Fucking terrifying.
That episode,
it's like a horror. Yeah. It's like a horror. When you watch Black Mirror, you feel like it's the future, but only like 2 years in the future. Like, it's terrifying. It feels really real. And the speech I sample for the beginning of the song Empires that Ed was referring to is Daniel Kaluuya's character with a knife to his throat. He's in this horrific kind of X Factor situation. Mm. He essentially says, creative content has become this kind of cheap fodder that's just easy to swallow, basically. Yeah. And if you've got anything with any more depth than that, then you just get shunted aside. The best thing about that is that I got a text from Daniel and he said, "Dude, I can't tell you how honored I am to have my words on your track."
Mm.
And at the exact same time, I was sat with my producer, Mikis, who composed the music, and we were shitting it that we weren't allowed to like use this guy's voice. And I was like, I got his text now. It's all good.
What?
But yeah,
and
he
was in Sicario recently and absolutely fucking killed it.
Oh, listen, honestly, like I'm not a betting man, but all my money is on Daniel Kaluuya, like as the next big black talent after like Chiwetel Ejiofor and you know, Hayward and like Boyega, there's some Elba. Yeah. There's some brilliant black British actors that are just killing it worldwide.
Yeah.
And honestly, I believe Daniel's next.
He's human.
Yeah, gonna say he reminds me a little bit of our friend Will Poulter. You know, in that he feels so much like someone you know.
Yeah,
Chiwetel's amazing. David Oluwaseyi, amazing. These are amazing black actors.
Yeah.
But they're such heroes. He feels like a human being that you know. Do you know what I'm saying?
And more power to him.
That's why I love Mark Ruffalo.
He will always be Mark Ruffalo now.
Mark Ruffalo, yeah.
Because doesn't he feel... I've never met the dude. I'll probably never meet the dude.
But
doesn't he feel like... You've met him?
Well, very
okay, we'll
get
onto that. But doesn't he feel like someone that you've met somewhere in a past life and you've just chilled and had a sandwich?
Yeah. He's very short.
He looks short. That's not a surprising thing to say. He looks short in every film.
For the Hulk.
But that's the beauty of
Hulk. No, he's Bruce Banner.
Hulk's got to have a vulnerability to him. So
Bruce Banner.
He's
not Hulk. He's Bruce Banner.
Oh, I guess you're right, man. Yeah. But that's... it upsets me.
I saw a clip and it was Ed... but someone was trying to fucking catch you out on like comic book shit, and Ed was just like, oh, well, and he just dude, the detail that you gave in the response.
I'm taught by scholars, yeah. You know, so I'm taught by people who really know a lot. Same as martial arts, like I'm like base entry level.
So let me ask you this: I got into Deadpool via Wolverine a few years back, and I read this origin story. It put me in good stead for watching the movie, because when I was watching the movie, I was like, oh yeah, Francis Ajax, blah, blah, blah. And it reminded me, and I went back. I literally went back home after watching Deadpool and pulled out this origin story that I'd bought. Like, because you play a proper prick in the
proper
movie.
Proper prick.
But I was actually surprised
such a
going back.
From who you are.
I was surprised going back to how fucking evil he was in the comic.
I mean, like, you know,
and that big A on his chest, he looked like a proper prick.
So, wait, he had an actual he had an actual superhero costume.
No, he was called the Attending.
Yeah, he was the Attending.
Or the Attendant sometimes, but the Attending is what they'd call him. So he had a big A.
He had a superior though, which you don't really see.
Yeah,
Dr.
Killebrew, which we did have and which we did shoot, and he was
really
fast, and they cut it.
I had one big criticism of the film, and it was. In the wider scheme of things, it's so minor, but it just pisses me off as a father of girls that it was overseen. It didn't get acknowledged. Every single scene in that movie is deconstructed brilliantly. Everything's undercut. Everything's like, oh yeah, this is what you expect to see, right? Isn't it funny that it's here? It's cliched, isn't it? You know, the whole way through, which I love. I love that about the movie. But there's one scene where you're in a strip club and there's naked girls who I'm always happy to see.
Of course.
But I was just surprised that there was no comment like, oh yeah, you know, like
this is the scene with naked
girls. This is the strip club scene. It was just like, yeah, there's some naked chicks.
The way I say it is like this, is like, you know, I really, you know, like I said earlier on, I like to make allowances for all doubting and try and understand criticisms, and it is helpful, especially from my close brothers and brethren, to hear that, to hear these things. But that criticism, for me, I say it in the sense that that's the world we exist in. So the world of Deadpool exists in dive bars, in fucked up underground surgery workshops. That is just, you know, it's kind of just part
I agree 100%. It's just that the fact that every other scene they were like, oh, look, here's the superhero landing.
Yeah, but don't forget Stan Lee was
there.
They
didn't
making
do it in the
making
strip
it
club.
Seem like Stan Lee's
DJ
there.
Stan Lee.
Yeah,
to, DJ be honest, Stan to be honest, Lee. To be honest, I was too busy masturbating in the cinema to realize that.
Dude, I remember the first time I went to New York, I went to like a divey type cinema, which I realized afterwards also showed porn movies, but I watched a normal movie there. And I
so you stuck to the seat?
Literally.
No, but there was a dude jerking off in front of me to a movie. Yeah, to a movie that was not sexual in any way. And I think he must have been a leftover.
What, like Schindler's List?
I'm trying to, you know what, I'm going to remember by the end of the podcast what movie it was.
When I was going to mention Schindler's List. This is Ed's look to me going, right, it's only taken an hour and a half.
She's the only girl in colour. She's the only girl wearing a red jacket.
Fuck.
But you know, men need to jerk off like normal people need to take a shit.
Yeah, at least 18 to 24 times a day. Like
on the
train
with your mobile, you know what I'm saying? While they're stopping at a station.
You know what kills me is the guys that think they're being slick because they're turning their phone away from you on the tube to check out porn, and you sit behind them and you see it in the window to your left, and you see what they're looking at. Actually,
but porn on the tube, man. Come on.
No, you don't need.
Dude, I've
wait.
Seen porn in the craziest place. This is the hardest thing about raising girls, because there's so many dark things I've got to tell my daughters. But I'm not going to say what shoot it was, because you could probably work out who the person is if you break it down and you ask the right people. But I was on a high profile shoot and I was being driven home by my unit driver, and it was the last day as well. It was the last day I was going to be driven home by this dude, and I don't know if that gave him a bit more
he was comfortable.
Freedom or a bit more
he was comfortable.
Comfort.
He does it every time on his last
but
day.
It was a long drive. We were shooting we were shooting outside of London. He was driving me back to Hackney, and I must have just passed out. I don't normally sleep in cars, but I must have passed out. And I'd slumped to my right in the back seat. He was obviously on the right-hand side.
Yeah.
When I woke up, I just opened my eyes. And he had his phone. You know how you have your phone in the little seat or whatever it is, the little holder, you know, and you use it as a sat nav. And when I woke up, he was just scrolling through erect penises. Like, this dude is like in his mid-50s.
He was driving, right?
He was driving. We were on a motorway, bro, and he was scrolling through erect penises.
That is illegal, right?
That, yeah. That's...
I'm the talent.
And that's the least bad thing about it. It's illegal.
I've had situations before. I had a situation where it was a very low budget project and they got the runner to drive me, right? Which is kind of an unheard of thing. Normally you'd hire a dude who drives you.
I've had that before at festivals where I've had, you know, runners or whatever driving.
I felt bad for this kid because he was like 22. His girlfriend got pregnant. They hadn't planned it. And they had a newborn baby girl. So he wasn't sleeping.
Yeah.
And he was a runner. And anybody who knows anything about shooting anything knows that whether you've got massive money or no money, the runner is fucking, it doesn't sleep. And he's driving me up that road. Was it the M62 or something? And he's a very unsure driver. You know those dudes who are just like, they're a little bit, they make decisions real late, which is not, that's not what you want from a driver.
Like Corinne, come on.
So the motorway splits.
We'll come back to that.
The motorway splits. There's a slip road off, or there's the main road, and he just can't seem to decide what he's doing, and he just doesn't decide, and he just drives up the middle bit straight into this fucking rock, and it's just like bang, just straight into this rock. And he swerves off at the last second, and the front left wheel catches the rock, explodes. I'm like, fly forward, catch myself.
What?
We call up production, and obviously they're furious. We go in, and they're like, okay, this dude's getting fired. And even though I had claims to all sorts of shit, the first thing I said was, fuck you lot, man.
He's got a kid.
You hired a runner to drive to do a unit driver's job, man. Trying to save money. Let him keep his job. He's don't let him drive. By any means, don't let him drive. But come on, man. You know? That shit happens a lot. It happens a lot.
That's the only beef that I've ever had with producers, really, is stuff like that. Mm. Is where I'll say to them, how the fuck are you going to treat this kid like that just because he's a fucking runner? And I've had producers say to me before, I've been a runner in the past. You know, I've had to work 21-hour days. He's got to get used to it. I say, fine, but you're sending him to pick me up after these fucking things with 3 hours
sleep. Let him chill.
What? Like, I'm not happy to get in his car, even though I love him.
It's bonkers.
You know what I mean?
Also, there's that old adage, which is, you know, the feet you step on today are going to be the feet you have to kiss tomorrow.
Bro, that's not even a fucking cliche.
No, it's true.
The best guys at producer level, at director level, at DP level that I've worked with were runners first. Okay. On another level, but related, how moany are some actors? I don't want to say any names, obviously, but fuck me, man.
It's ridiculous.
Some actors, I'm like,
it's ridiculous.
Are you out of your like, dude? You're doing one scene. You're getting fed. You're getting whatever the fuck you want, and you're moaning about like how long everything's taking. Whenever like there's an actor moaning to me about, I can't believe the tea was as lukewarm
this afternoon.
There's a motherfucker up at 3:30, risking their marriage. They haven't seen their kids in like 2 years to try and get a fucking foothold in the movie business.
Bro, I had a situation. Like, I'm like, I pride myself, like I say, on what Mumsy and my pops taught me, you know, manners and humility and gratitude and all that, you know, that's the foundation for everything. And I had a situation where I was on a £12 million yacht off the coast of the Riviera in the south of France.
I mean, of course. I was doing that yesterday.
It used to be GTI Golfs and, you know what I mean? EZ Raves. You know what I mean?
EZ! In Keith, in your car, Keith.
You know what I mean? In white Keith, that duct tape holding it down. That was the smoke dance days.
Well, we used to throw fucking CDs out the sunroof.
Oh, did we?
the CD's scratched now.
CDs ain't a thing.
Nah, but... But where this actor was saying to me, like, man, I've been here for 6 hours and they haven't called me. Why the fuck did they call me? They called me in. I said, yo, you've been sitting on a yacht in the off the coast of the Riviera and people have been making coffee for you.
That's crazy,
bro. And I said to them, imagine you worked in, what, it's a bit better than working in Sainsbury's, isn't it? I said it in jest, like trying to joke. Yeah. And she went, oh my God, imagine. I went, you know what, I got people. No, I said, I got people back home right now working in Sainsbury's.
Yeah.
No, and straight up, and she's like, oh. And the conversation deaded. And where I'm always tried to be gracious and polite and positive and humble, there was a moment she's like, okay, right. Okay, I think I'll leave Ed alone for 10 minutes. I was like, nah, man, you know what I'm saying? Like, she couldn't, like, oh my God, imagine working in Sainsbury's. Imagine, because that's the reality. That's normal shit. Mm. The real life is working in Sainsbury's, working on a fucking building site, yeah? That's real life.
Yeah.
Is working, is being a fucking nurse, is the angel midwives that brought our children into this world, is the angel teachers that have 30 fucking kids, yeah? And me and you are sitting there getting coffee made. I'm playing my fucking Gregory Isaacs and Chester P in the trailer, like, chilling. I don't care if you woke me up at 4 a.m. I'm out here smiling.
Do you think this attitude of like, you know, being very fully appreciative, and do you think that's something to do with where we've come from? Do you think it's something to do with the fact that we've done this later in life? Like, where do you think this comes from?
I think the
from?
Later in life counts for a lot. I mean, I think, like,
it's a massive thing.
I think there's like there's this whole two-way street, which only now with hindsight I realize is a wonderful thing, especially paired with relative success, is this thing of both being entirely thankful, entirely gracious for every opportunity, and also not fucking needing it one bit. You know what I mean? People are not gracious and people feel like they need this shit, and that is some bullshit. Real life is so much more important than this.
I mean,
this shit don't make me happy. What makes me happy is holding my fucking son's hand, going to the playground, walking him to school, taking him gymnastics and swimming lessons. What makes me happy is knowing that I finished a project with integrity and heart. Not that it made 600 mil.
What makes me happy is just eating an entire wheel of cheese. Like,
Coronis is a disturbing amount of cheese.
Well, you know,
but what's your favorite cheese?
Oh, come on. You can't do that to me on the spot.
Yeah, I fucking can.
That's fucked up. It's fucked up, man.
What, no, Boursin? Port Salut?
Port Salut! Come on, like, this is fucking entry
that's
level.
That's so middle of the road.
Nah, man, I love entry that shit, bro.
Jesus, bro.
What are you talking?
He's talking Rock 40. He's talking...
Oh, come on now.
Crazy shit.
I can't do this.
I'm not a blue man.
I'll tell you what, yeah. See, with Corin, one of the things I love about him is, like, there's people in my life that have been in my life from before I was born, even, like, family, best friends from primary school. I really struggle to buy them a present. Like, if I had to buy Corin a present, I know what I get him from this year.
Cheese.
For another, like, 15 years.
And I would be equally and as grateful every single grateful. Time.
It's a beautiful thing.
I mean, I fucking love cheese, all right?
No, he does love cheese.
But, you know, just
I can't hold that against you at all. That's a wonderful addiction.
So there's one thing earlier that we were talking about. We were talking about car crashes and stuff. And, like, that just reminded me of, like, of the same day, you know, when we were in LA, when we had steak. But before we went to go get steak, I was driving. You know, I don't drive in England for some weird reason. I only drive when I'm in America, and I was in LA for 6 weeks.
You did an extreme drive the last time you were in the States. You drove for like 10 hours to fucking...
To Carolina and Savannah.
From
and
where? From like New
from
York?
From Washington, D.C. So, you know, I drove a lot.
You got pulled over, didn't you?
I got pulled over by the cops, and this is as a guy with an Arabic last name and a big beard. I got pulled over by the cops, and I started praying out. I was like, oh shit, fuck. They're gonna fucking put me in Guantanamo or some shit, alright? So this guy pulls me over, and he runs up to the door and he's like, sir, all of this stuff. And so I got him to fucking, I was like, shit, okay, hands on, first they go, hands on the wheel, hands in the air, hands on, I'm like, what do you want me to do with my hands? so I'm there all freaking out, and then the guy just pulls down the window and went, okay, shit, what do I do? Be English.
Yeah. Be as English as you possibly can.
More English than I've ever been in my entire life. So what did I do? I just went, I'm sorry, good sir. Sorry, I don't really understand what's happening here. I'm just from England, and I'm just a bumbling fool, and I'm just driving along on the wrong side of the road.
Sorry,
it's so funny how you do this.
Sorry.
I'm so sorry.
Sorry.
And so this guy,
just Hugh Grant, the shit out of it.
Like, I was Hugh Grant in like a cunt, and this guy just he didn't know what to say, and he was like, oh. Well, okay, I guess just have a good day, sir.
Yeah, there you go. Because there's two types. There's two types of Brit in America. It's Hugh Grant and the archetypal villain and the archetypal pussy. So you always go Hugh Grant. Do you know what I mean?
I went full on Hugh Grant.
I'm worried for when Ed gets pulled over in the States.
Well, this is it.
The old Ed might pop out.
So we'd come from, we'd done shooting. We went up to Griffith Park and we looked at the view of LA and it was beautiful. We'd had a lovely day. And then we driving down. I'm driving down, and which bear in mind that the context of this
down
is
Sunset Boulevard.
Sunset, you know, it was Los Feliz, and so but the context of this is Ed has always driven me everywhere. So this is the first time I'm driving you anywhere.
Yeah.
And so I'm driving back down. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm driving my boy about LA. I'm feeling fucking good. All right, cool. And you know, and I'm driving, and this guy comes along. Drives out of the lane.
That's LA driving. They can't fucking drive out there.
And
bro.
Like fully sideswipes me. Like the car just slams into the side
like
of my
it was
car.
Fast and Furious 25 or something.
You know what I mean? And so I'm like, I don't know what to do, because obviously I get a bit angry. I'm just getting angry. And Ed's like fully like big brother mode. Like, don't worry, just pull over there. We're fine. We've got
Corey's
this covered.
Fully tensed up behind the wheel
like,
anyway.
Okay, I'll fight someone. It's fine. And so like, he's fully like, just like,
dude.
Like, I'm like, bro, this guy can't tell us
nothing.
Shit.
Yeah. So I'm there. Transporter's just coming out. So I'm driving with the transporter in the fucking whip with me. And I'm like, we pull over. This guy, he pulls over. He does not expect two angry-looking British guys, one of whom is the transporter,
throw him out
of the car.
One of us could quantum leap out of here right fucking now, motherfucker.
And
deal with that.
We just jump out of the whip. Like, all right, bruv, what the fuck's going on? All right. And we're just like fully like, just shaking, going, he just fucking went into my car. And it was a beautiful day. He looked at us, no joke, and he just went, okay, sorry guys. Maybe just look at the insurance and like just find out. And it's like, that was it.
Yeah.
Well, listen, as much so enough to talk to two of my very close friends forever. That's a beautiful point to wrap up the first ever Thanks for Trying podcast. Thank you very much to Doc Brown and Ed Skrine for being my guests on the first one. I Am Bear is out now. Make sure you go pick that up for yourself, for your kids, for everybody.
Yep.
And then the Ricky Gervais film is out in August 19th. And what's the name of the film?
Life on the Road.
Perfect.
Can't wait for that.
And Ed Skrine, of course, Deadpool is out right now, and The Model is out right now. Go seek it out. Find a way to seek it out. Go fly to a different country if needs be. Find it. I'm very excited to see that too. But yeah, thank you very much to both of you for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you very much to our guests, Ed Skrine and Doc Brown. Big thank you to the producer of the show, Seb White, Jarvis John for filming it, and Patron for the alcohol. The Thanks for Trying podcast will be back for episode 2 next month.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.